We're the largest educator in prisons in America, so we have a pretty good educational series out here across the country. Men and women want to come here to Cleveland. The Cleveland Browns, D. Jimmy Haslam, and the players are really big sponsors of a program that helps transport anyone in the country here if they finish that program in prison. So, you know, now we've expanded to so butcher shop, bakery, housing. We built a nice fitness center. We have a library that you'll take a look at later today. Probably the largest culinary library in the state. But I learned that hard work doesn't have a language. So going back to building teams, it's really important to find people who understand themselves.
Hey, teammates. We're here at the Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute, and I am so fired up to spend time for the next hour or so with one of my heroes, a guy that is special, and you're going to learn a lot about him and how he's built teams and made a difference in people's lives. Please welcome Brandon Krestowski.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
You know, the first time that I ever met you, and probably the only other time I've ever met you, we were at Leadership Cleveland.
Yeah.
And that was a Leadership Cleveland is kind of a thing that helps young people and folks learn a little bit about the region, learn about what other people are doing, hear some good stories. And I was kind of like the warm-up act for you, so I got a chance to speak a little bit to the group. And then I thought, well, I'm going to listen to this young man. This will be interesting. And when you spoke about what you're doing at the Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute and what you're doing with all your locations, and we'll get into all your restaurants, I thought, that may be the greatest thing in the world I've ever seen. And I'd like you to talk with our viewers and listeners about what your vision was, what your story was that maybe led you up to having that vision. I want our listeners and viewers to learn about you.
Absolutely, man. Well, yeah, thanks again for reaching out and making this happen. You know, I mean, look, this whole thing, Edwin's, isn't like this rocket science. You know, it's just a very basic approach to humanity, and actually taking like an athletic approach of like seeing ball, hitting ball. You know, we don't need to overthink solving a problem. And well, the whole pathway for me started when I was in Detroit. I was young, like a lot of us, right? I don't know how you were when you were 18, 19, but I think we were running around, and I got into some trouble. I was in and out of jails, and I really didn't have a pathway forward, like a direction. You know, barely finished high school, but got through it. And in any event, I met a chef when I was on probation. You know, it wasn't like a forced job or anything like that. It was just, I was on probation. I start knocking doors looking for employment, and this chef takes me in, and you know, he mentors me and he teaches me like the basic lesson that everyone should understand. And he said, you know, Brandon, he said, it's not practice that makes perfect; it's perfect practice that makes perfect, right? And I look back now, and I, you know, people might be in the restaurant industry for 20 years, but doing it the wrong way is not, you know, again, anyways, great lessons at a young age with a lot of energy and no direction. I knew exactly where I wanted to be the rest of my life, in a kitchen, right? In a restaurant. I loved it. And from there, it was around the world, man. I went to school in upstate New York at the Culinary Institute of America. Mm-hmm. I apprenticed under a guy named Charlie Trotter. At the time, was the best in the country, if not the world. He gave me a mental like approach to making anything happen with what you have. You know, he just got this way of believing. Anyone who worked for Charlie Trotter has gone on amazing things because he pushed the paradigm of what's possible. Right, because some people think only this much is possible or that much is possible. He said that anything is possible, and he did it in some excruciating ways, Jim. You know what I mean? Like in the kitchen, he would really like hit you at the right time when you thought you couldn't handle more at that moment in a kitchen. That was your limit. He asked more of you, and you rose to it, and so on. Man, from there it was France. Worked at a Michelin 2-star and Tours, and then in Paris at a Michelin 3-star, and I wanted to be the best chef in the world, so I went to Manhattan, which is the world. Right. Anything west of the Hudson doesn't count. And so I started grinding it out, man, climbing the ranks. But I got two calls within a month and from the chef that I work for. And he called the first time to talk to me about Quentin. Now, Quentin was a young African-American kid that I work with in Detroit when I started cooking. And, like, I lost my innocence with that guy in the kitchen. Mm. What does that mean? It means, like, the first time you julienne, like, you know, you kind of figure it out, you know, how to hold a knife. And, like, we were side by side. And the first time you make mayonnaise, like, have you ever made mayonnaise before?
I have not. No.
I was like, damn, miracle. You know what I mean? You're putting like this oil and oil and oil. And next thing you know, it looks like mayonnaise. Like, oh my gosh, it's mayonnaise, wow. Right? Like, how does this happen? Yeah. Everything that, like, for the first time we did together. And he called to tell me that he was murdered, you know? And he was stabbed over 20 times. It was bad. And then within, like I said, that month, he called to tell me the sous chef was killed. And I'm sitting here like, you know, when you're, there's like more to life, right? And sometimes you just, it's a feel.
Yeah.
It finds you.
Yeah.
But in New York, I mean, I'm cooking off these Bonet ovens, which are like $250,000, $500,000 ovens, copper pots. We're selling $5,000, $10,000 bottles of wine. Or it just didn't seem like that was enough, man. Like, what do? We get a paycheck at the end of a week or two. You know, you keep grinding it out. Yeah. There's something bigger to the grind. And just wanted to do something that would impact others because I was here. They weren't. So 2004, had this idea called Edwin's, a restaurant that could educate someone on the wrong pathway.
Wow. You know, we've talked to so many people who have voiced what was critical for them becoming a part of a team or them having some success on a team. And so often it's that mentor. And, you know, you kind of went through the people, you know, that gave you a chance.
Yeah.
You know, that allowed you to feel like you are part of a team. And the other thing that really jumped out at me is that they made you stretch yourself, you know, and that's one thing we always talked about in coaching is that really what our players want is for us to help them become the best they can be, you know, not sugarcoat it and not set the standards low. And so as you think back all the way back with Quentin in Detroit, or as you moved along, if you had to tell our listeners and viewers what's unique about a team in a kitchen, let's start with the kitchen, because I know that's like the middle of a ball game. And what's unique about building a team in a kitchen?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. That's a really good question. I mean, first and foremost, like, these things, like, You always gotta look back at what you're talking about building, right? Like, what's the circumstance or what's the undercurrent? Like, how does this whole thing exist? Like, think about a restaurant, man. Like, they shouldn't exist, right? Like, it's like your home. Imagine when the restaurant first started. We're talking about the restaurant first. It's like your home, and you're inviting complete strangers in, and you're cooking for them,
right?
In exchange for money that you hope they pay you. You know what I mean? The whole like concept and premise just kind of started out on an unusual foot, atypical to that of what your home is. But like in Virginia, they instituted laws that you are required to take people into your house at a certain point and show refuge, right? That's why they're so big in hospitality. Mm. So you have this idea of, like, you know, hospitality, humanity, home, and it all kind of intersects through food, right? Mm-hmm. So in this wild circumstance, what do you have? You're building teams around it. And you're building teams around the most unpredictable person that could walk into your home. You're building circumstances to the most unpredictable product that walks through your back door. So you're starting off by building on this unpredictability. And what it takes to build a team in a restaurant, I believe, and I'm like a huge like proponent of this, is like this emergent energy and how you live and succeed within it. So for me in my life, there wasn't anything predictable, right? A lot of things in my life were unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And so I came to find out through life that if you can feel the energy or you can understand the circumstance, then there's always a gray area you can succeed in. You can always find a meal in a gray area. You can always find a job in a gray area. It's just like living in the gray is how I've survived, right? Mm. So going back to building teams, it's really important to find people who understand themselves, okay? Which is why I totally, utterly, 100%, 10, 20% agree with hiring the perspective of someone who's been incarcerated, okay? Because oftentimes, the one thing you can guarantee and count on is they know themselves.
Yeah.
They've hit rock bottom.
Yep.
They've been solitary. They've had to live with less, and they're hungry for something more, but they understand where they're at. So in a kitchen, if I can get people who understand themselves, learn how to feed off the emergent energy and unpredictability of the circumstance that we're all in, a restaurant, then getting someone to learn how to cut or saute is kind of easy. You know, I guess there's some little traction in this unknown, but that's how I'm building teams here. I'm building teams with people who have a really smart perspective on life, who are tough, and who get that tomorrow's not guaranteed. It's unpredictable.
Yeah. You know, that I think about, oftentimes I'd been asked as a coach, you know, what's the most important trait that someone could have to be a good member of the team? And you know, there's a lot of things that you need people to be, but the one that I always ended up coming back to if they asked me for one was that they're selfless. You know, that that it was about the team. As I listen, that humility thing that, as you say, someone who has been incarcerated has had that chance to think through, you know, been humbled a little bit, thought through what life has brought them and what they wanted to do, and then bringing a group of team members who are humble together has got to be a great formula for success, and a thrill to take them from that humbled moment to where their self-esteem starts growing. It's got to be a thrill.
It is a thrill, right? And you know, like I said before, like cooking's the easy part, man. Teaching someone how to saute or cut is not that hard.
Right.
Humanity and rebuilding humanity in someone is a challenge. So like the single toughest thing, like if you have this question later, I'm sorry if I'm blowing it now, like the question everyone always asks me, what's the hardest thing to do, Edwin? Like, what's the hardest thing you're faced with every day? And of course, business people think it's money and cash flow, and it is, right? I mean, we're always battling that. Come on, sure. It's always going to happen. But I don't know. I can objectively ask or objectively save. It's pretty objective. You know, is it the climate or the economy? I don't know. There's some things you can do that are very objective. The one subjective, you know, component of what we do here is how do you rebuild humanity in someone that prison or poverty is ripped away? And so it is thrilling. So how we do it here is we just challenge, you know, we continue to challenge with something someone doesn't believe they can do. We put them in a situation, we watch them develop for a week or two, they start to feel like they got their mojo, you know, and then we switch them to the next thing that you don't think you can do. Oh, you know, I got a bartend, I can't bartend. Week or two later, you're shaking the drink, man. You're putting it on the table. You're like, okay, I can bartend. You're confident.
Right.
Oh, I can't work in pastries. I don't. Oh. And then, wow, that's a beautiful cake you just made, right? So we consistently, from day one, we're rebuilding this muscle of humanity. And the second thing that we're doing is, it's very important, Jim, is we're all tempted every day. Like you and I are tempted by something every day.
Yep.
But we're on a more powerful yes. We're on a track that says, this is a more powerful way of life. And so the other part of what we do here is we got to break, rebuild, inspire, and do these like wins. So if someone says, this is a more powerful yes being here than it is going back to something I did or something that's an opportunity that's not right, I'm just going to stay this track and win. And because winning, man, when you're winning, dude, nothing else, like that's like, you're like, okay, I can say no to this. I can say no to that.
Right.
But it's really important to get consecutive wins. And so seeing that unfold, man, seeing people winning, seeing people rebuilding themselves, seeing people like, you know, just like glowing because they're human, right? They should. Dude, that is amazing. That's the best paycheck.
Well, you know, I remember listening to your presentation at the Leadership Cleveland. The two biggest things I took home with me from that was, you know, the more powerful yes and the more compelling reason to make a decision. You know, because you have to make decisions, right? And what's the compelling reason that I'm going to make the right one? And to help people be able to do that, to have the confidence to make the more powerful yes and the compelling reason to make the right decision is life-changing.
No.
I mean, to me, that there's nothing else they need. It's interesting you talked about the cutting and all that's easy. You know, people would ask all the time, well, what do you look for in your coaches?
Yeah.
I said, I want people who want to change young people's lives. Yeah, they got to know some X's and O's, but, you know, it's not rocket science. There's only 11 guys.
Yeah.
Five of them have to be on the line of scrimmage. So it's not that complicated, you
correct.
Know. But are they the kind of people that want to raise up and help our students, our players, have that more powerful yes, have that compelling reason to make the right decision? So I'm wondering, other than your what you went through.
Sure.
Along the way, I know in my career, I learned a lot of lessons from each of the folks I was with, okay? So you're in Detroit and you're with Quentin. What would you tell us you learned about life and about being a part of a team from Quentin?
It's appreciation.
Hmm.
You know, appreciation. Yep. It was, you know, in Detroit, I'm a minority, you know what I mean? This is just
right.
what it is. And, you know, despite not having a ton when I was younger, there's people a lot less, right? You know, realize this. And just the appreciation of being in a safe environment. Like, mm-hmm. that's probably the biggest thing I took from him. You know, a kitchen, some people, I'm at work. And, like, you know, you take mm-hmm. these little things for granted that, A, it's a safe place.
Right.
It is.
He made
place.
You feel safe. Yep.
Not only just made me feel safe, but just when he came in there, he was comfortable, man. He was comfortable, and he was safe, and he was appreciative. And so I think that's what I took the most from him.
So who was the chef that took you in right when you needed it?
Chef George. Yeah,
Chef
George. Kalergis. Yeah, he's still in the industry. I know his wife opened up a bakery, and so they still do that together.
Yeah.
But, you know, he took me in. And
what did he teach you about team or about raising you up?
Yeah, that's a good question. One, he taught me that, you know, you got to know the basics, and that the basics that you do and the product that you're putting forth mm-hmm. is going to go to someone else, and that's going to go to someone else. Eventually, you know, your action is going to have a couple of reactions, so make sure you do it right. And stay in line, man. Here's your role. Play your role, right? It's very, it's very... Very disciplined environment at kitchens. You know, that's why they have a brigade system, much like the army. You know, mm-hmm. you have your chef, your sous chef, your chef de partie, your chef de cuisine, your chef, you know, all these different stations and hierarchies. But, you know, he made me understand that you play your role and everyone's got a role to play. And if you play your role, you move up to the next role. And if you do that right, you play your, and over time, you know, you work your way up. And that was very important. Outside of the fundamentals he taught me of mm-hmm. cooking, right? Like you said, is the easy part, right? XOs.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding like the energy of a kitchen and how it works.
Playing that role, playing that position.
Yeah.
One thing we always talked about in football was we have a great defense. If mm-hmm. you know what role you have, but you need to know what role the others have and how your role affects them.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to do your role. And it sounds like the same thing in a kitchen.
It is. Listen, over time, so there's people who say, like, what, you know, how do you train? Like, what's your approach to training? And I always boil it down to these five things. You know, I say you meet someone where they're at, you know, like you're going to meet someone who they are, what they look like, what they sound like. You have to meet them where they're at.
Yep.
Okay. And then you have to take them to where they want to go. A lot of these employers are saying, well, I can't find workers. I can't, because money is not the motivator. Put someone's life ahead of yours and take them to where they want to go.
Yep.
The benefit's going to be your business, right? I mean, like, mm-hmm. they're going to mm-hmm. benefit in their life, but the benefit after that's going to be your. Quit right. putting the money first and your business first. Try putting them first and your. Yep. It's upside down philosophy, Jim. And like a lot of employers just don't get it. But I mean, you meet someone where you're at, you take them to where they want to go, you know you teach to the top. Practice makes perfect. No, perfect practice makes perfect. All right. You make sure you show them the entire perspective of where they're at, right? You show them every role and every position. So someone here at Edwin's, and this hits on the point that you said, they work the pastry, they work the host, they work this.
Yep.
I've led every restaurant in my career like that. You show someone the entire ship so that when they get into a role, they know how to play everyone else's role and what the effect, you know, does. The fourth rule I say is care. And look, you don't have to go out and build campus and child care center. Ask somebody how they're doing. Hey, you're late today. Why are you late? Dude, you all right? Because you're not normally late. You're usually a great employee. Like, I just understand. You know, my sister's going through. You know, then you start to like, I mean, it's super easy, man. Just ask them how they are. And then the fifth thing is get out of the way. Because so often in life, people want this beholden to them, like, you owe me. No, I don't owe you. You don't owe me nothing.
Right.
I'm just going to get out of the way, know that we're always here, and fly.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring that up about people talk about, well, we can't find people to work. I was just at an event sitting next to a person who was bemoaning they were having trouble getting the staff they needed or having their staff grow, you know, to the level they wanted them. And I said, well, have you asked them what's important to them? Because, you know, it sounds like you're disappointed about what you're not getting, but how about them? You know, what are they interested in? We were huge in goal setting. I wanted to know what my guys wanted to do, of course, in football, but in school, in their family life, in their spiritual life, in their effect on the community. I wanted to know what they wanted. Then it was easy, because then we could provide the opportunities for them to go get what they wanted.
Yeah.
And so as was your next mentor, if you will, Charlie Trotter, or was the next thing culinary school?
Next was culinary school.
Okay.
But, you know, I'd say the best thing about culinary school was I came in there and like they're teaching us how to make hollandaise, right? And I'm like, my mentor went to the CIA, so he gave me his textbook and notes from the CIA. And he groomed me on everything that he did when he was there. So when I got there,
now CIA is not the one our viewers think of as the governmental agency. It's the Culinary Institute of America, right?
Correct.
Okay. But when you said you went to the CIA, I thought, some of these folks we have listening might think you went to work at the CIA.
No.
Okay.
But I mean, they might need chefs too. I don't know. But,
right.
So it's possible. But no, the Culinary Institute of America, it's based out of Hyde Park, New York.
Yeah.
So that school, it really reinforced, you know, the first couple of months I was there, reinforced that, holy shit, I can do this. And you know what? If I can do this, I can lead. And, you know, there I was nominated group leader, like, so it's amongst your peers because they choose someone who they believe can represent the group. And I've never been nominated to lead anything in my life, man. I mean, it was a really cool moment because it reinforced the mentorship. It reinforced that, hey, this is how it could go. And then the leadership thing. And then after that was Charlie. And Charlie Trotter, He taught me how to make it happen and make it happen with what I had inside of me. Mm-hmm. Now he was like really considered a son of a bitch. This guy, like people would like detest him, but everyone would say yes. But without him, I wouldn't be where I'm at in my life.
Right.
And he would torment in ways like there's a time in a kitchen where you're always fighting time and space. There's never enough time and there's never enough space.
Mm-hmm.
And at the pinnacle of time and space, when you thought you didn't have enough time or enough space, you know, we were working on your station, he would say, hey, Brandon, here's Jim Tressel. He's going to come in and be a guest chef tonight. Why don't you mind setting him up with a first course and then showing him how you make your dish, right? So, like, in one moment, he took away the two most important things,
right?
Your damn time, your damn space, right? And you find out you can overcome that. It's a big lift for a 20-year-old kid in a kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like your mind says, hold on, if I can do this, then you understand?
Yep.
So he did that. He really twisted my head in believing I could do anything I wanted with what I had, which is why I made a leap to France, because I believe I could do anything.
Yep. Yeah. Were you scared to go to France? I mean, you were a kid out of America, had you ever been abroad?
No, man. No, I was the first kid in the family to go out of state to school. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
It was a big leap. But,
wow, huge.
Yeah, but at that point, you know, you're strong in your faith. You have a passion. You know, I couldn't read, write, or speak the language.
I was going to ask you, could you speak French?
No, couldn't read, write, or speak it, man. I mean, so it was just about like, but I knew, and this is the mentorship of France, right? I learned the soul of the cuisine. I learned a lot. But I learned that hard work doesn't have a language. Like, I could work my ass off, and no one could say, like, he's not a hard worker. It's like love or like a great song. You just, worldwide, you understand it. Universal language, hard work, right? And which is why, again, I didn't even have the idea of building this Edwin's until I got back to New York and, you know, went through some things. But it makes sense. Why can't somebody who maybe did 20 years be a great sommelier?
Right.
Why not? Because if he works hard, I mean, like, it's a universally, like, leveler.
Hey, teammates, I want to tell you about a project we're working on with Youngstown State University. One of the ways Ellen and I have decided to give back is through the Tressel Institute for leadership and teamwork. We've collected a set of successful business and nonprofit leaders to serve as guest servant leaders in partnership with the Sokolov Honors College to teach university students teamwork, leadership, and personal skills. We teach from a foundation built on gratitude, excellence, hope, love, and selflessness. If you're a young person or parent helping to search for a unique college experience, you can learn more at trestleinstitute.ysu.edu or ysu.edu. Links will be provided in the show notes.
So, was there anything that was really different about restaurants or the way they did things in France compared to what you had learned at CIA or, or Charlie's or wherever?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What's the big difference?
The touch, I think the way that you touch things and the way you approach your work day, it's a way of life. You know, you work. This is what you do. This is your life. You know, there's farmers that aren't too far from these restaurants, and you're at market, or you're so in touch with the land and who's providing what. And it wasn't just me in this situation or this chef. It was the generations of the family's chefs, or the generations of the family's farmers that are providing these sort of relationships to the table. So there's it's just the way you touch things. Everything is different. The peelers are different over there because they take off less skin, because you don't want to waste what the earth's given you. You know what I mean? Mm. You just trying to literally peel it. And so when you start thinking like this and then really letting the flavors like develop and come out, rather than just trying to like hit acute profiles like spice or like acid or like, you know what I mean? It's not so like American. Mm. It's very nuanced and beautiful. And so when you cut into that carrot and you eat, you literally could take 4 or 5 minutes to eat the carrot, because every bite you're like, oh, the earth, I could taste it. Oh, the chef's marinade, or you know, the way he cooked it, the texture. It's just an entirely different way of embracing food in your world, and that I learned there.
So is the dining in the French restaurant a different experience than dining here in the typical American restaurant, or is it?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean. I don't know. Like, my wife and I, we're always busy, man. We're running around. We don't have time to go out. But if we do, it's like, dude, we're eating for 3-4 hours. You know?
Wow.
Like, we enjoy each other. I take my daughter to a play. We'll go out for 2 hours, just talk. You know? Mm-hmm. And she's 7. So like, it's just an idea of how do we take food and enjoy it, but also enjoy each other, and you know, be thankful for the chef and the hands that prepared it. Like, literally,
right.
It's a special thing. So yeah, it's more sacred ground here. It's like, shit, give me this burger in 2 minutes or less. Right. I got to mow it down and like get to work. I mean, like, I get it. It's our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's not the lifestyle there.
Huh. And so their restaurants don't worry about how many tables they turn over, because they just assume it's going to be an experience.
Yeah, and like fine dining anywhere, I think you're expecting a longer turn time, right? Like fast food, there's fast food everywhere. Right. But yeah, in general, you'd find that, yeah, it's baked into the cost, or it's baked into like the business model.
So, back from France, is that when you started Edwin's?
The idea came, after I was working at the first restaurant, Le Cirque, it was on 55th and Park. There is where I had these phone calls with George, and I had determined that there's more to life, than there's something bigger I can do. And I ended up going back to school at the CIA to finish a business program.
Okay.
And then in that business program, wrote the business plan for Edwin's. That's 2004.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just finished 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? And it's expanded. So it started with just the one location.
Correct.
And talk to our viewers about the whole concept behind who I wanted to help working here.
Yeah.
How I wanted to put this together, and then how it's kind of blossomed into, to me, one of the greatest things going on in the city of Cleveland.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea was, the mission was how could I make an influence on changing the face of reentry? And reentry in this case is people returning home from prison, right? They're reentering society. It was just this thing, right? Like, people in our society and media in our society and society itself has just branded someone into prison as being this callous person who is irreparable, disposable, just like all these things that I'm not, right? And I've been in and out of these systems. They're terrible systems, and they strip your humanity away, and they're not easy. But the world needs to see a fresher face to that, because it's really what it is. That's the honest truth, is humans are great. They can do the greatest things. They can do the worst things. But in this case, the great things. So the idea was, you know, how can I build this? I started doing it in prisons. So I started teaching in a men's prison here in Ohio. Class 25, just started swiping my credit card, getting product and cooking. Started breaking down barriers there. You know, the wardens were very interested in building a great program, but I said, we can't do it without great knives. So we had to figure out a system of how to get knives in and make sure it was all, you know, part of a process. Then I started teaching in a women's prison. And then this is all meanwhile, while I'm working a job in a restaurant, running, you know, as a general manager, and getting that together. So eventually I met enough people, built up enough systems to raise money to then open up Edwin's. And this is Edwin's here, right? So, you know, it's a 6-month training program. We're serving men and women coming out of the criminal justice system or affected by it. We never ask what your offense was. We simply ask, have you been affected by the criminal justice system? Because we're about moving forward. We're not about looking back. You can see that. I mean, the first thing I did in this place, this is the original restaurant, I ripped out the cameras. I said, there's no way we can move forward unless we have a culture of trust.
Trust.
Yep. Yeah, we gotta have trust, man. We gotta have trust. People can't be thinking that we're looking at them and watching them. And so we ripped those cameras out and then just started going forward and saying we're gonna be the best restaurant in the world. You know, there's a documentary about this, the founding of this, that went to the Oscars in 2018, right, called Knife Skills.
Knife Skills.
Like a knife you cut with, right? Not life, knife. And it kind of captured this whole, and I'm glad they did, because I forgot, but it was this belief that we can together build the best restaurant, the most powerful restaurant in the world, based upon our perspectives and our talent. And so those 6 months, you learn every position. You go dining room, kitchen, and as things have expanded, now you work in the bakery, now you work in the butcher shop. You get like a really, you know, great perspective of our industry at the right level, the perfect practice. And then you can decide afterwards what you did like and what you didn't like, and then move on, and we help you move on.
Yeah. So where did you find, or how did you find your new team members?
Yeah.
Because of your relationships back teaching at the prisons, or how do you recruit your team?
At first, I would go to, I mean, for the students, right? It's a program full of students. I would go to every shelter. I'd go to every courtroom. We were already teaching in prison, so the word was out. I would just go to anyone, damn person who would listen. You know what I mean? I talked to other different nonprofits helping people out of prison. It's just like a lot of like just beating the pavement, man. Just, you know, beating the pavement. Now it's, I mean, we're the largest educator in prisons in America. So we have a pretty good educational series out here across the country. We have great media contacts and awareness, so people have heard of us.
Right.
We have judges who recommend, probation officers, but most importantly, our graduates. You know, we're nearly 1,000 graduates now, and so word of mouth spreads. That's the best advertisement.
Right.
So it's different now than it was before. Now, my core team, like the managers around me, I just look for people in the industry that I work with here in Cleveland who thought about cooking and food as more. Like there was more to it. Like it wasn't just that they were, I don't want to say they're smarter, but they saw more in just this industry. And that's what I started surrounding the core team with.
People who are interested in helping raise up all those new team members that you had. And so as someone graduates from your program and you help them get somewhere, one of the impressive things I remember from your conversation with Leadership Cleveland was how successful your how low the recidivism was.
You know,
which anybody can have programs, then, you know, when you look further down the road, well, you know, but you've had great success from that standpoint.
We've done all right, man. We've done all right. I mean, with a national average of close to 60%, right, and our state average of, you know, mid-30s, we're less than 1%.
Wow. Less than 1%. That means, you know, those five things that you talked about, the one that probably we talked most about was they need to know that you care.
Yeah.
And that's the way you have no recidivism, is they have that faith now that someone, that the world cares about me, you know, because of what you guys did. And so Edwin's location. We're sitting in the original.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk to our viewers about how widespread now you've got restaurants and butcher shops and all the rest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's you know, really manifested. And the key driver to all this is the person who's in need. So the person in our program is my boss. You know, I don't know how you looked at your hierarchy. If you looked at the AD as your boss or the president.
The players were my boss.
Bingo, right? That's the same here. So these are the men and women I need to lead. So what is needed, right? And it makes perfect sense.
Right.
Again, this is like, if we were talking about this in like a business forum, they'd like look at us like aliens, you know? I mean,
right.
Like, what are these guys thinking? But, you know, you put that person first. And what it's done is there's a need for housing. So went out and started to make deals around the corner on some apartment buildings. We now have 3 apartment buildings. Two houses, because there's also families involved. So we have a campus there. Mm-hmm. So that was big. So housing just kept gobbling up that, because I knew that people coming out of prison, that's the number one thing you're going to need is a safe place, and especially in an environment that's safe and people who are like-minded.
And I know it's hard for people coming out of prison, because I've had guys that I've been a part of that one of the toughest things that happened was when they came out of prison, like, okay, I do want to get on a right path, but I can't even buy a house. I can't even get a job. I can't even, you know, the barriers. And as I listen, you're getting rid of the barriers. You know, they've got something to do, somewhere to live, someone who cares about them.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of barriers.
Yeah, just knock them down. Knock them down. Just like it was your own child. You know, if you had a child and they didn't have a home, you say, let's build a home. Shelters aren't good enough. That's not adequate.
Right.
You know, demand more. And then when it's like, how can we deepen education, right? Like, what are the primary things in this restaurant that are costing money? Meats. All right, let's open a butcher shop. Found another storefront, boom, open butcher shop, right? So now we can train there. And it's also a sustainable way to run a social enterprise. What about next? A bakery, right? Baking and pastries is a huge avenue for this all over the country, right? So, you know, having all these different, like, skill sets to teach, you need classrooms. And our classrooms happen to be businesses, because the businesses help fuel the education and so on, right? So, you know, now we've expanded to butcher shop, bakery, housing. We built a nice fitness center. We have a library that you'll take a look at later today. Probably the largest culinary library in the state. Huge, huge. In any event, so yeah, we keep doing that. Then, you know, as I grew in life, right? Because, you know, I did this when I was single and knocking things out, and then, you know, I find a great woman who accepts me for who I am. This is wonderful. I never thought that'd happen, you know? And then we start having kids. And then I say, man, this is hard, right? What about people in our program that are having kids, right? Right. I mean, it's not on your radar until it's on your radar, right?
Yep.
And then you start thinking about it. We had 80% of our students with kids drop out of the program.
Mm.
Right? Now, I'm not saying it's all 100% kids, but if we can lessen that,
right?
So opened up a child care center a few years ago. So we do free daycare. So if you have kids, you come here, drop them off, you come to class, you know, you do your thing. And then expansion inside of prisons is really exploded. We started with one company on these tablets. We put a 30-hour curriculum on there.
Mm.
And now it's on, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of tablets. Yeah, it's rolling.
And so those folks that got a head start in prison, if you will, when they come out, are they further along in your curriculum if they happen to join you? Or how's that work?
No, I mean, the whole idea of the tablet program is to get like a book, man. Books have changed our world, because they can penetrate places. They can penetrate regimes. They can penetrate so many things that they're trying to prohibit through words, right? That was the idea with the tablet, is like, how can we inject hope inside the prison walls? It's a free program. We never ask for a dollar from somebody. We let it happen. The belief is, if we can just get our message inside, when someone's in the darkness of prison, life can change, right? So that's what we do. It's a 30-hour curriculum, videos. They knock it out.
Mm.
But what the advantage is isn't that they're that far ahead. One, they have an idea that they can do something.
Yep.
Two, and I'll show you before you leave the letters that we got. I mean, there's banker box full of letters a week that we receive around the country. Is men and women want to come here to Cleveland. So, well, we bring them to Cleveland. The Cleveland Browns, D. Jimmy Haslam, and the players are really big sponsors of a program that helps transport anyone in the country here if they finish that program in prison.
Wow. Yeah. That is huge.
Which is why laying the groundwork for housing was important, because, you know, I could see that one coming a few years ahead of the curve.
Right.
So you finish the program, you got a ticket here. All right. Now, if you can't get here, what we just started 2 months ago, which we need help with, and we're building and fundraising, and we're doing all these great things, is there's 80, 95% of the people who can't come here because they're on parole or probation or papers or the mm-hmm. families there. So what we're doing now is if you finish our program, you reach out to us, and we help you write your life plan upon release. We help working with you about your goals, mm-hmm. what you're trying to do. There's tremendous software out there in AI where we can type in a zip code in Boise, Idaho, and find 20 places that can help someone get to their next step.
Right.
And so we're starting to now become this like counselor to people across the country who finish our program. Right. This is the, now this one's like starting to really ramp up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the prison program gives you an edge just by saying, hey, I can. This is a possibility. It's, maybe it's a career I like. Yep. Two, you can get directly here. Three, we can start planning your career.
So how many are on your staff? I mean, it sounds like you're changing the world. And how many people do you have on your staff?
I think it's going to be 25-something. I would have to count. I don't know. Well, it's 24 hours in a day, and you know, when you grind, you can do this. Right. The second thing is we have students, right? We have probably 60 students at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're doing a lot of like the more like the learning and cooking.
Right.
We have a tremendous like volunteer base. We have a lot of volunteers. Mm. Yeah, so if anyone wants to get involved that's listening, just, you know, reach out. We have people in California volunteering because they're close to a prison system in California, or they're really tech savvy. They're helping us build back office ways to help people across the country quicker. Yeah.
So for our viewers to know, we're sitting in the original Edwin's French cuisine restaurant. Give us a rundown of what the other locations are restaurant-wise.
Yeah. So Edwin's here, Shaker Square, Cleveland, Ohio, right? Yep. We just do French fine dining. That's just, you know, this is like the fine dining place.
Yep.
The butcher shop, two blocks away. So the butcher shop is the one that facilitates all of our meats. They provide us the meats with the sauces, and you can go there and buy a fresh cut of like ribeye, whatever you want to do, grocery shop. Next door to that is the bakery, right? Fresh breads, fresh pastries, you name it. So that's the other location. Across the street from here is Edwin's 2. It's another restaurant. We opened up during COVID. In COVID, we double, tripled business. So we hired a lot of people during COVID. We did a lot of things, but one of which was getting more space in a restaurant. And so there's another restaurant across the street. Graduates work there. We do more like a Mediterranean French, you know, feel. Mm-hmm. But both of which will move here by the end of the month to a larger location. Both combine a larger location called Nighttown, which is very famous here in
Cleveland Heights.
Yep. Down the hill 4 minutes.
Yep.
So that'll be the new Edwin's. Looking forward to that. Better for classes, better for everything. We have obviously the prison programs that we do, right? Child care center. I mean, this is what we're doing. And we consult a lot. So we opened up a restaurant in Medina that's being run by graduates now called Serenite. Mm-hmm. We just opened up the Friar's Table down on 13th and Euclid, you know, and we'll just keep going.
You know what? Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if every city could replicate what you guys are doing? And one of my passions post-coaching has been education and workforce development.
Yeah.
And so many times as I've been visiting with people who are bemoaning, you know, they don't you know, have enough workforce, or are we doing education properly? That's why I wanted you to come on. It's all about the team, is because it comes down to those core things, that it starts with the student. Yeah. It's about them. You care about them. You need to challenge them. All those things that you do, we shouldn't have a workforce education issue if we're approaching it the right way. I don't know anything about the culinary business. I've only read one book, and it's Cameron Mitchell's book.
All right.
Yes, and now what's the question? and you know, I think Cameron was part of CIA. He's a restaurateur in Columbus, and I think out west a little bit too. But I thought it was a cool thing about how he went about building his team. With he wanted all of his people to know that whatever the question the customer asked, the answer is yes. So his book was Yes, Now What's the Question?
I like that.
And he wanted to get you know, that feeling amongst his team that, you know, we're here, you know, we're here to serve. And his whole thing was, it's about our associates. Everyone talks about the customer's the key.
Yeah.
His feeling was, no, it's our associates are the key, And if they're good, the customers will be well served.
Yeah. Yeah, Cam's a legend, man. He's a CIA grad too.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, and
yeah,
that's he's got the right approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe, I don't quite understand. I do understand why the apprehension is for a lot of businesses that are struggling with labor. I mean, we got thousands of people we can hire right now. We could open a restaurant a week, no problem.
Wow.
I understand the apprehension. Man, I got like, I'm going to do something that's different. It's not what we were used to doing. It's we have a consistent way of how we've done it for 20 years, but like everything's changed, man, and you got to change with it.
Right.
But, you know, taking the leap of saying, hey, look at, I'll start with a small section or small cohort, maybe in one department, and, you know, choose whoever you want to choose. It could be reentry, it could be veterans, it could just be anybody, right? It could be anybody, but invest in them first.
Right.
And just see where that goes. Because, I mean, like, it's not, it really isn't rocket science. Like, I tell people all the time, I say, look in the mirror if you want to blame somebody. It's mm-hmm. not COVID. It's not the economy. It's not the new Gen Z, whatever they call Gen X. It's not that.
Right.
It's you. It's you. Yep.
And you got to meet them where they are, as you said, and you got to mm-hmm. care about them.
Genuinely care, you know, like,
genuinely
really like be
care.
Like, man, I'm with you, you know, and to turn a team like that around after you have that culture is you know this, and they could be so great, a culture, and they could be so bad, and it's like they've been doing it forever, and now that becomes the culture, and unless you uproot everything and everybody to rebuild it, that culture will stay the same, even if you take out 20% of your culture. The 80% will still make it a, you know, swimming upstream feeling
mm-hmm.
when you try to do something new. So I get it, man. But I mean, at some point, it's not just right and just for your humans. It's just the right thing to do in life.
Yep. I'm going to ask you to talk about one more thing before you go.
Yep.
So you had that wonderful dinner out at Grafton.
Yes. Yeah.
At the prison. Prepared by folks you had trained there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that, because when I saw that on the news,
yeah,
I mean, I knew all about you, and once I met you, I said, this is the guy that could change our world.
Mm-hmm.
But then 9 months later, I saw the thing about dinner. Talk about that dinner out at the prison.
Yeah, dude, it was a great day, man. Everything was perfect about it. You know, the whole idea was to, you know, raise visibility and do something that's never been done before, right? That's throw a, you know, a 5-course meal or 6-course meal inside of a prison, open to the public in a garden that the men grew and we built the menu around. So it was pretty cool,
right,
man. So the idea was like raise visibility and saying, hey, it's possible. And our state of Ohio has been so progressive when it comes to education in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And preparing people to return home. They've been so like ahead of the curve in this country and showing other states that, hey, you know what? You can do things that are creative and you can do things that are like different. And so we drove that visibility pretty high that the men can do it, the prisons can do it, the public can do it, and it can be successful. And it was successful. Yeah. It was an amazing night. It was an amazing night.
I tell you what, I've just been so impressed with what you've done and who you are and how you're trying to impact. And hey, team, I told you, Brandon Krestowski, making a difference in our world, building teams, maybe in a little bit different way, but the fundamentals that we just learned, that's what it's all about in building a team. Brandon, can't thank you enough.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks,
Jim. Thank you. Till the next time, it's all about the team.